Hey guys, welcome to Yanko Design Podcast Episode 3. I'm LT. Hello. On this episode, I had the chance to speak with the people behind Cherokee Studios. If you don't remember, it was an article I wrote back this past June about one of California's very few LEED Platinum certified buildings. So the people behind it, Rethink Development, Greg Wright, Steve Edwards, were kind enough to speak with me. And I want to go ahead and first preface by apologizing for the audio quality because Skype was just being a little bit iffy and testy with me. But it's still clear enough for you to hear them speak. So check the post because there's a link back to the original article about Cherokee Studios where you can see pictures and you can sort of get the full breadth of what all the building offers. So the building opens up this September, I think. So I'm definitely going to try and check it out once it does. So enjoy the podcast. And without further ado, let's get right into the interview.
Okay, so why don't you guys start off by telling me who you are, what your role is at Rethink, and what your role was in Cherokee Studios.
Okay. This is Greg. Steve and I are the principals at Rethink Development. Mm-hmm. So we have been involved with the project throughout, the Cherokee Studios project throughout. We found the site, negotiated with the previous owners for the purchase of the site, and then have been working with the design team to design and now construct the building.
And what is Cherokee Studios?
Cherokee Studios is a famous recording, or was a famous recording studio. Mm-hmm. With over 300 gold and platinum albums recorded on the site. It was originally Republic Studios, which was a movie studio actually, and then became MGM Recording Studios where they did the music recording. And that's when first Sinatra started using it. It was built out as his string room. And so he did it extensively, and then it passed into the hands of Cherokee Studios. They bought the building and continued to have Sinatra as a client, but also added many, many other clients that came in and recorded there mm-hmm. over the years. And like I said, they had 300 gold and platinum albums recorded there. So really significant music history, really significant part of Hollywood history as well, many soundtracks for different movies were recorded there, and then we came to own it as the business of recording was changing. Mm-hmm. They were not having the same success with their businesses they had, but they wanted to make sure that the next owner really honored the history that had happened there and tried to continue it in some fashion. So that's how we came to be the owners, because we believed in preserving the cultural history of the site, although the building itself didn't really have any useful life left in it. We wanted to incorporate some of the memorabilia from the site and some of the materials from the site, and then also carry on the recording tradition by building out some of the units in a way that would support recording artists, producers of music, and in their home recordings of music.
Oh, so this is, the old building was demoed and you guys are building it from scratch?
That's
yeah.
right.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that. I thought you guys were like doing a major remodel or something.
No, it was an old Bow Trust building that had been added onto. It was really pretty ugly building. the inside was very functional as a recording studio, but it still really didn't have any redeeming quality to it. The only material in the whole building that was really worth saving was some really nice hardwood paneling from the Black Forest in Germany that had been installed in Studio One. So we preserved that.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, some of the memorabilia will go back up in the lobby to commemorate the recording that happened there. But other than that, it's all new construction.
I'm curious. So you said you basically you have some reclaimed wood. What did you use it in? In the building?
It's slated to be used in the lobby. It's really, like I said, a beautiful wood. Uh-huh. And And so we're going to have it installed artistically. The architect, Larry Scarpa, is working on some concepts for how to install it in a way that will make it stand out so that you recognize that it's not just some old paneling that was brought in and put on the walls, but that it's actually something meant to commemorate the building. So it's, right now the design is that it will be cut in some kind of a square or a rectangular shape, a large object mounted to the wall with a frame around it.
Yeah, kind of an aluminum frame.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds very cool. So the new Cherokee Studios, what I know, I mean, based from the articles that I already wrote prior to this conversation, I know about its sort of its green attributes. Can you guys speak to that a little bit about what's special about it? And because there's a lot of firsts here.
Yeah. It's pretty significantly better than a standard building in many different ways. Water use and energy use and indoor environmental quality. So there's many different aspects that make it a more environmental and healthier building.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that stands out about the building is the energy performance of it. It's designed to be about 46% better than Title 24, which is Title 24 is basically the California Energy Code, and a baseline building, a standard building built today to today's standards, is about 46% more uses about 46% more energy than the building that we're building. So
okay,
pretty significantly beyond a building built today, and if you go back just a few years, pretty even more energy efficient than a building even built 5 years ago. So, and the way we achieved that was really through the process, the design process that we used, and many of the different solutions, the environmental solutions came out of this process, which is an integrated design process.
Mm-hmm.
Where all the different disciplines get together in a room to share ideas about how to design the building. So you have the mechanical, electrical, plumbing engineers, you have the architect, you have the owner, you have the landscape designers, and general contractors. Sometimes you might have other specialist consultants, even real estate agents sometimes. In our case, it was more the core design team that came together, and we all talked about how could we achieve a very efficient, very environmentally friendly building.
Mm-hmm.
And through the process of sharing ideas, coming up with different strategies, we were able to design this building that met many of these different environmental needs with a very small incremental cost. And as a result, we came up with some pretty creative solutions, one of which, and really the most obvious when you see the design, you see the renderings, and eventually when you see the completed building, is the secondary facade that was designed into the building.
Mm-hmm.
It's a about 10 inches from the structural facade is this perforated metal screen.
I was just going to ask what it was made of. Okay.
Yeah, it's an aluminum. It's a perforated aluminum, and it's mounted to an aluminum frame. That's then mounted to the building. And it was originally proposed as a design element by the architect, and then we kind of latched on to it and said, "Hey, you know, we could really make this into a functional thing. What would we need to do in order to make it something that also provided other services to the building, like shading and
mm-hmm.
noise attenuation?" Also wanted to enable the natural ventilation to work and people to be able to see out. So through the process of going through that with the mechanical engineer and the architect and us, we arrived at this solution. And so it does all those things. It provides shade, so we have better energy efficiency. It blocks some of the noise from the street. And then it's perforated, so it allows the ventilation to flow through the building and out through the screen. And and allows people to see through it without it being open. And then there are operable sections. And Steve, do you want to talk about the operable sections of the screen?
Sure. As Greg was saying, the screen kind of forms a second facade or an exoskeleton, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the advantages to it, instead of having it permanent or completely fixed and permanent, it changes on a daily basis based on what the inside occupant feels like they want during that day. There's about 8 different sections on the screen that will open and close. So they're about 12-foot high sections, 10 to 12 feet at different points, and the perforated aluminum screen will open. It's a manual process, but the owner can go out on his balcony and open the screen to have full view of the city and downtown LA beyond in the hills. They can still see through those perforations when it's closed, much like a screen on a window.
Right.
But if they want completely unobstructed, they can open it on up. And they'll open it up maybe, during the middle of the day or when they're having people on over. And then at night when they want it more quiet and more private, they'll close it up.
So you said there are 8 operable sections. How many units are in the building?
There are 12 units. And the screen primarily covers the eastern building. The building is built with some ground level parking and retail in the front, and then there's a podium deck, and then there's essentially 2 buildings above that around a courtyard. So there's 6 units in the front and 6 units in the back, and building the east and west buildings.
So the
screen primarily wraps the eastern building, and then there's smaller strips of the screen that wrap the west side of the building, and all the operable elements are on that front part of the building.
Yeah, there are 8 primary operable elements where the screens bifold out, and they can open any spans from 8 feet to 12 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 5 or 6 additional operable sections where just a panel pops out. So that would be about a 3-foot opening. And those are for the bedroom level in the middle of the building. So if you have all the elements on the screen opened, you'll have 12 to 14 different kind of fins popping out and then being able to see the glazing and what's going on behind it. And then when you close them all up, it'll be a nice, sleek, kind of silvery aluminum facade.
Right.
Another thing that this design achieved was to bring back or try to incorporate the musical element. So, this facade changes on an hourly or daily or weekly basis, and it was meant to kind of allow for this building to change much like the music that was created in its former iteration.
No.
If you go to our website,
right,
LostTherapyStudios.com, and there's a section called the building and images, you will see on the images section, as you rotate through, you'll see how the different screen configurations occur. You can see it all closed and partially open, more open, and fully open. So it's kind of a...
But the occupants have full control over when and where they open.
Correct.
Right, okay, gotcha.
Actually, it's animated. If you just click on the building and then kind of let the animation play, you'll see it open and close.
Okay, well,
so yeah, that's totally controlled by the occupants.
So what I'm looking at that right now, but why I'm looking at it... can you tell me a little about Rethink? Are you guys core competency in green projects?
Yes, that is our focus. Greg and I came together to kind of jump into the green building space and only do green building. So we will not build a building or buy a building or rehab a building or work on a building if we can't make it go green in some respect.
So then you guys
usually have a LEED certification strategy and process attached to it.
So you guys would be the perfect people to ask, why are there so few buildings that are platinum certified, LEED platinum certified in California?
It takes one of two things to achieve a LEED certified building. Either one, a lot of money, or two, a very experienced design and development team to make it happen.
A LEED platinum building, you mean, right?
Is that what not?
You said LEED certified.
Oh, a LEED platinum building, yeah. A LEED certified easy. LEED platinum is quite difficult, and so there's different approaches. You can spend a lot of money on expensive windows, expensive systems,
mm-hmm.
and achieve that. Or you can understand how a building works and see it as a system, and then design it in such a way that you don't need to incur that much cost. And that really just requires people that have been in the field for a while and have an understanding for how to achieve lower energy use, lower water use, better indoor environmental quality, those kinds of things, without breaking the bank.
Right.
So I think that's why it hasn't happened a lot, is because people are just now learning what process is necessary. And that's the process that I was describing before, which is the integrated design process, where you have all disciplines working as a team to achieve a better design. And when you do that, that's when you're able to achieve a high level of certification without a high level of cost.
Now, the Cherokee Studios building, which side does that fall on? Was it a lot of money? Are you guys just excellent at what you do?
it really comes to the design and spending more time and more thought in the design rather than spending more money. And we did spend more money. I mean, our air conditioning system, for example, is probably 50% more expensive than a standard packaged unit on the roof, which is what a lot of multifamily projects will do.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, there aren't too many items that add cost to the building itself. So we're able to achieve it at a relatively small incremental cost by designing it properly and getting single elements in the building to fulfill multiple goals. Like the green roof, for example, is a nice amenity. People can go up on the roof deck, and it's a beautiful area with this living roof. But that also provides insulation for the building and keeps the roof deck cool and doesn't contribute to heat island effect. So it's doing many different things, and you only have to invest in it once.
So was there anything you guys left out of the design of the building that you wish would have made it into the final product? It's got to be something.
There's got to be something, right?
That's a good. That's a really good question. You're gonna have to make us think, aren't you?
I should play the Jeopardy theme.
Well, we did find things during the process that we ended up changing. I mean, we moved some walls and we moved windows and added windows and changed the screen design every time. A lot of it in the quest to frame the right views and make the living experience as good as possible.
So,
in the original design, I'd say we missed a few things. I think, and now this is pretty lame answer, but the one thing that came to mind is I wish we had provided more power capacity for the electric vehicle charging station. We didn't really have specs for how much power electric vehicles could take. We provided basically the minimum amount that is needed to charge a vehicle. A little bit more than the minimum, but today they have these really high-powered charging stations that allow for very, very quick charging of electric vehicles. And
right, that just means it takes longer for the vehicles to charge, not necessarily the vehicle, it wouldn't work, right, okay.
That's right. Like for the Tesla, they have this really fast charging station that takes, I don't know, 900 amps or something crazy like that. And
right.
That's impossible in a multifamily building. So we would never have gotten there, but it would have been nice to provide more power capacity there.
I'd say another thing would have been cool, although we didn't. It wasn't even really practical in the beginning stages, was a gray water system. Mm. That would have added significant cost to the project.
And it takes space, too, which is a very limited resource on this project.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what that is, because I know a lot of people who read the blog aren't going to know what a gray water system is.
Mm-hmm. It basically recycles, you reuse a lot of the water you use in your unit. Say you take a shower or use the bathroom sink.
Mm-hmm.
Or use water that doesn't have any waste in it, like mm-hmm. toilet water or sink or kitchen sink water.
Mm-hmm. That would be considered black water.
Right. Gray water is just, it's gray, I guess, with human skin stuff on the ground. Not
nice.
With other bad stuff. And it's filtered and treated to a degree, I think. And then it's reused to flush toilets and possibly water or irrigate landscaping.
Right.
So but, you're definitely reusing the water.
Right.
At least one.
The going back to the point you made earlier about power, I was reading that the building generates some of its own power, and then it's getting the rest of its power, a lot of the rest of its power from renewable energy. Can you talk a little bit about that too?
Yeah, we're installing a minimum of 19 kilowatts of solar photovoltaic panels,
mm-hmm.
and that will provide approximately 11% of the energy needed for the entire building.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the power, I think the other 40% is coming from a green power contract. So we're contracting with a wind energy company to provide the renewable energy credits equivalent to the amount of power used by the building, to half of the power used by the building.
That's great. So there's one thing that the reason why when Ani sent me this this press release about the building that got me really excited. One was because it's in LA. I'm sure you guys mm-hmm. know there aren't very many buildings like this in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to tons of shows like CA Boom or whatnot, and they have these beautiful models of these really, really green homes. But mm-hmm. they're so out of everyone's price range, and they seem more fantasy, you know, even though it's a realized product right in front of you. I can't really see anyone building it in LA. So that's what really drew me to this story when she first sent it to me. So big kudos to you guys for that, because it's really, really exciting. I don't think people think of LA as a green city. You know what I mean?
No, I'm sure they don't. But we do have the good fortune of having a lot of green building going on, actually. I mean, some of the biggest commitments to green building in the world are here in LA, actually. We have LA Community College District has a multi-billion-dollar green building program. The LA City of Los Angeles is dedicated to building all of their new buildings green. And then you've got LA Unified School District also dedicated to building green buildings. So there's a lot of money being invested in green building in LA and just in those programs. And that has led to a fair amount of expertise in green design and
right.
green construction.
Right.
Because of the people that have been involved in those projects.
You are right as well. It's happening on a large kind of scale, on commercial scale or institutional scale. When you get down to kind of the homeowner scale,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to find a LEED certified green home that's less than $3 million.
Right. Yeah.
It's difficult to do, and they're beautiful homes. I mean, you know, you see some of these. Sometimes they're not huge, but a nice 4,000 square foot home that has they spent $600 a square foot to build the home. So it's, you know, it's $2.5 million just to build the home. So it's not not really reachable for a lot of people in LA. And this product, we think, and these con- condos will be reachable for people that are in the green but can't spend millions and millions of dollars.
Right. Are you guys able to say approximately what the price range is?
They'll range from, we have different size units from 1,100 square feet on up to 2,400 square feet.
Uh-huh.
So they'll range from 600s on up to above like 1.2 million.
1.2 or 1.3?
Is that what you're asking? Yeah, 1.2, 3, 4. Probably not above that.
I just want to point out.
Unless there's a bidding war.
I just want to point out to people who don't live in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles area, that $600,000 for a place like this in Hollywood, I think is a really good deal.
It is. It's probably shocking for many people.
So because of its musical sort of historic music, historic foundation in music, let's say, who, and I don't think we forgot to mention that this Cherokee Studios is a lived work loft space, correct? And so who is it really for? Like, what kind of, I guess, people do you envision or do you think will live there?
I think it's for kind of three different groups, and they can all be one. It's for people that are in the kind of entertainment slash music industry, whether they're professionals in it or just kind of strong enthusiasts for the space.
Mm-hmm.
It's people that are very, I would say, into the green and environmentalism. And then it's people that want to not only live somewhere, but kind of have a home office or their home-based business in the place.
Right.
And I think the perfect nexus of all that is this building, because it has the entertainment history to it. It has obviously the LEED Platinum certification, and you can legally live and work in this place instead of other places around LA that kind of say they're live work but aren't zoned as live work. And if you think about who lives and works in Hollywood, entertainment people are very into green, and sometimes they have small production companies. So that's our target
right.
kind of audience here.
Gotcha. So right before I called you guys, actually right after the written post went up on Yanko Design, I had a couple of the other editors send me questions that they wanted to ask. So I'm going to preface by it. All three of them are industrial designers from Royals Phillips. So...
Okay.
One question is, and some of it may seem kind of ridiculous, but I guess to designers this is like very important for them.
Okay.
One question is the building wired for fiber optics vis-a-vis like to get fiber optic cable, to get fiber optic internet, et cetera, et cetera?
No, the building is not wired for fiber optics. We did put the Cat5 cable throughout for data, but no fiber optics.
Okay, next question is, since this building is in Hollywood, and I want to say it preface again, this person lives in Singapore, so okay. He has a very specific idea of what Los Angeles looks like. So does this building, being in Hollywood, have a pool?
No.
No.
we wanted to. There's not enough room. The site is too small to really put a pool on.
Right. Yeah.
You need a bigger project to put a pool on.
Right.
From a area standpoint.
Yeah, but to address kind of the same demand that a pool is addressing, we have a couple elements. One is the roof deck. And as I mentioned before, it's a green roof, so a living roof with a deck kind of surrounded by this living roof. And so that's kind of one peaceful space for people to escape to. They can have outdoor furniture and lounge on the rooftop and enjoy the greenery around them and then the distant views from the roof. And then we also have a courtyard, and the courtyard is more of a lush kind of natural colored, warm colored space that is meant to be an escape from the urban setting. So you can turn inward to the courtyard for that more relaxing time, or you can go up to the roof deck and enjoy the views.
And you just actually answered the third question, which was, is there a roof deck? I think I mentioned it in the post, but I didn't explain that it was a living roof deck. So that's what the question was. When you say living roof deck, you mean like there's live plants. Is it a communal thing, or does each person sort of have like their own area to do whatever they want?
It's a communal common space roof deck with plants growing around it.
Gotcha.
It's not plants just in pots up there. It's a kind of an integrated green roof system. Mm-hmm. So
it's really soil on top of the roof with plants growing in it.
Can you guys talk a little bit about how that benefits the building? Because I know I've seen a lot of that coming up, or seen a lot of it in different projects around the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it benefits the building in many different ways. I think the most apparent is it just creates a really beautiful space for mm-hmm. the people who live there. But the other benefits are you have this 4 or 5 inches of soil on top of the roof. So if you've ever been on the top of a roof, you know how hot they get, especially here in Los Angeles. So
yeah.
this green roof is keeping the rooftop cool, which keeps the interior spaces cooler and reduces the need for air conditioning. It also insulates the roof in the wintertime, keeps the heat in. And at the same time, it's keeping the ambient temperature cooler. So you've got these green plants just keeping the area cool. So the roof will be a more pleasant place to be, but it also benefits the greater LA area by not contributing to the heat island effect, which is the effect of the whole city heating up because there's so much hardscape and hard surfaces absorbing the sun.
Right.
So that as well. And then finally, it absorbs some of the rainfall. In LA, we have very little rainfall, but when we get it, it tends to come in big storms.
Mm-hmm.
So this major flush that comes out of our streets and out into the bay and picks up all the trash. So it kind of slows down the process of the water running off from the roof. It captures some of it, and you know, some of the plants drink some of it, but it really slows down that process and takes any impurities out of the water before it ends up going out to the environment. Our building actually doesn't benefit from that part of the benefits of a green roof as much because we also have a secondary infiltration system that actually takes all of the water on the site and directs it into the ground so it recharges the aquifer so we don't have any runoff from our site.
That's fantastic.
So there are several benefits to the green roof system.
That's fantastic. I'm all out of questions. I only have one left.
Okay.
And it's a serious question. And I want you guys to think long and hard about it, but hopefully you answer the right way, is when can I move in? Please?
We'll be done at the end of August, and come on down and put in an offer.
You can move in now if you really want to deal with construction going on around you.
Yeah. Cool. That was it, guys. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks so much, Long.
Thank you. Hope you guys have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Okay. Bye.
If I haven't mentioned it enough, I want to move into that building, like, ASAP, badly. Anyways, thanks again to Greg Wrights and Steve Edwards of Rethink Development, and thanks to Ani and Haley of Secret Agent PR for hooking up this interview. Until the next podcast, you guys, I promise it won't be another 3 weeks before we do another podcast. Again, you can always email me at long.tran@yankodesign.com. I'm open to hear from all our readers. So until next time, bye!